If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
Welcome to the Blackhawks Talk podcast with Steve Conrord and Jamal Mayers. I am Pat Boyle. We are breaking down the Blackhawks being eliminated from the Stanley Cup playoffs in five games. The Vegas Golden Knights took care of them 4-3 in game five. We'll hear from Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, and Jeremy Colleton. We'll get the guys' thoughts on their postseason experience and what's ahead for the Blackhawks. It's all coming up on the latest installment of the Blackhawks Talk podcast.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
So Jammer and Steve, the Hawks get off to a great start in Game 5. Building on the victory, the 3-1 victory in Game 4, they jump out to that 2-0 lead with Toews getting on the score sheet, DeBrincat scoring again, and you're thinking they're going to head into the room with a 2-0 lead, and lo and behold, right before the intermission, 31 seconds before, Max Pacioretty makes it a one-goal game, Steve.
Yeah, it's funny because I thought, boy, if they could just weather the storm the first 10 minutes, you know, that'll be huge. That'll really, you know, set up well for them in the rest of the game. And wouldn't you know it, inside the first 10 minutes, you know, they've basically got, well, they scored one goal and then they scored another goal later. So it looked like they had all the momentum. Unfortunately, as you mentioned, that back-breaking goal by Pacioretty, which was really a broken play goal, looked pretty harmless when the puck was in behind the net, and all of a sudden it goes through a couple of pairs of legs, pucks in the back of the net, and that gave them momentum, obviously, going into the second period. So if you couldn't have drawn it up any better for the Blackhawks as far as getting out to the 2-0 lead. It seemed like Corey was in their heads, because every time there was a real good scoring opportunity, Corey was shutting the door, and I've seen – you know, I've seen series won by goalies being able to accomplish that. That one goal, I think, will come back to haunt them late by Pacioretty in the first period.
Yeah, I would agree. I think Corey was doing a great job. Almost, though, like, they weren't getting the bounces, and then all of a sudden, and if you're thinking about the Vegas Golden Knights, they were peppering Corey on occasion in that first period. And less than 2 minutes left in the first period, Hawks are up by two goals.
Right.
And you thought, okay, let's just get out of this period. Let's just defend. And then it was a real unfortunate ricochet off the stick of the captain right to the back door to their, you know, preeminent goal scorer who wastes no time, wasn't nervous whatsoever. Most guys would have maybe flubbed it or hit the crossbar. And, you know, Pacioretty didn't make any mistake.
I have to credit Vegas for – they answered a lot with goals after Hawks goals and quickly in this – throughout this series. Those are always tough, because you feel like you got something going, and, you know, whether it's 18 seconds later or 2 minutes later, or, you know, in this case it was basically a minute and change later – they get it right back. They did a really good job answering Blackhawks' goals.
Yeah, and that happens so often, in the playoffs, the momentum, the energy you get from scoring a goal, and can you carry it into another shift where you have the other team in their zone? And even if you don't score, that can be energizing. That builds momentum. So to have them, like you say, basically within just a little over a minute, come down the ice, score a goal, you know, and I deemed it a lucky goal. I mean, they still ended up with possession of the puck behind the net. They get it out front, and good things happen when you shoot the puck. That's huge for any team. And that's why I like this team. you know, the Vegas Golden Knights, to me, Jammer, they're very machine-like. Mm-hmm. They're almost robotic. It doesn't matter what's happened to them. They're going to play the same way. And they're down 2-0, and you think that most other teams might be scrambling. They might be a little nervous. They might be worried because they're up against a goalie who seems to be stopping everything. And they turn the tide with that one shift.
That's championship caliber team, right? What they do is they stay to their structure. They trust their structure. They trust each other. And they know that over the course of a 60-minute, and they can go as long as you want in the playoffs, if they continue to play that structured, predictable type of way, they're confident that they'll get the saves they need. They're confident they'll end up creating turnovers that they need. They'll win the wall battles. And they also do one thing that's very important to me, and I think Duncan Keith kind of alluded to it, is they pay attention to the details. The details of their game are extremely sound. And that really puts pressure on teams not to make any mistake because they're ready and willing to pounce on those mistakes.
Their transition game was fantastic. Their defensemen picked the right opportunities to jump into the play, and they truly roll four lines. You could make a case for large stretches of the five games that the bottom six of the Vegas Golden Knights were – they're more effective lines than sometimes the top two. And, you know, they lose Stastny and, you know, it's next man up mentality. So this is just an extremely deep team. It was just, they're impressive to watch, really.
Yeah, they've got a little mix of everything, don't they? They've got the size, obviously.
They've got some
great speed. Alex Tuck, who plays on the third line, I mean, what a player this kid is. I liked him when he played in Minnesota. He's starring here now. And then you throw in Riley Smith and Marchessault. They're a deep team. And, you know, I know their fourth line is an energizing line, but they carry a lot of play, and they've scored some goals against us. I think they had a couple in that first game. So they've got a little bit of everything. And I honestly thought coming into this series that their back end was a weakness. It's not. Braden McNabb, I was never a fan of his. I think playing with Schmidt really helps, Nate Schmidt. Who knew about Nick Holden and Zach Whitecloud? I mean, you know, they don't pull down huge minutes, but they're very serviceable. So Pete DeBoer can put, you know, any of those six defensemen out at any time, and he doesn't have to shelter or hide anybody. So, if you told me right now that they're going to win the Stanley Cup, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, they're big, they're heavy, and I keep saying this, but I'll stick to it. I think the game regresses 5 to 6 years. You look at last year, and I know teams want to copy the team that wins the championship, but the Blues are heavy and strong. They're not super fast. The teams that have success in the regular season, it doesn't always translate. You look at the Tampa Bay Lightning and what they did and how they retooled their roster and their third and fourth line. And I'll even take it a step further. You think about how are these players finding an extra gear, an extra level without fans? And I think a lot of times you're looking for your third and fourth line guys to provide that energy level, to provide that spark that you might get from the fans that are there, because that is palpable. You can feel it as a player, whether it's a big hit, a big goal, or what have you. I think it puts even more pressure and importance on those energy type of players, and I think coaches recognize that within the game.
The Vegas Golden Knights won the special teams battle on, Tuesday night into Wednesday morning. The Hawks were 0-for-1 on their lone power play. Vegas connected on their lone power play. That was a Boqvist penalty that the Golden Knights took advantage of. And it was Boqvist who had Alex Tuck go around him. And, he could have used his body a little bit to keep him away from the rebound. But I think that's one area that when you look at Adam's game, and we saw it early on in this series, and it was probably why Adam was sat and Lucas Carlson played the following game early on. It was big physical forwards had their way at times with Adam.
Yeah, and he's going to learn, and these are tough learning experiences. You know, the camera cut to him a couple of times after goals where he was kind of scored on, and he was upset. And, you know, those live with you, but those are the lessons that are maybe, you know, teach you the most. What I didn't like tonight, you know, a penalty, he takes a bad penalty and they get scored on, just his positioning on the ice. And if you're not a real big guy, and, you know, Duncan wasn't a big guy his first few years in the league. And the league was a little different back when Duncan broke in too. But his positioning was always excellent. And, you know, sometimes I think Adam gets a little caught out of position. You know, he's got to learn what side of the ice is his. And, you know, if there's a guy coming down on Duncan, and Duncan's got him one-on-one, you know, I got to look somewhere else and see if I can help out with anyone else joining the rush. He did not do that on the Alex Tuch goal. Yeah, and he got his stick there at the end, but he shouldn't have had to make up that much room to get back. But, you know, like I said, this is a learning experience for him. He will eventually get this. And the fact that he's got so much offense and he'll be able to carry the offense, that'll make up for some of those defensive deficiencies.
I completely agree with your last point. Is I don't think he's ever going to become a proficient defensive, like a defensive defenseman. That's not who he is. He can clean up some of those positional things, and that'll certainly help. I'd like to see him do more on the offensive side of things and be a part of the offense in the offensive zone. If he ends up creating two or three goals but is on the ice for one or two, I think we'll live with it. But he's not. He didn't really create in the offensive side of things either. So I think that as he matures, and he's so young. I mean, I remember when 10 years ago, defensemen would never play when they're 19. Mm-hmm. It would be 23, 24. Give them some time to mature and understand the league and the game. And it's a big jump from junior to playing with men, not only strength-wise, but positioning and what you're having to deal with. And there's only six of you, so you're going every other shift. It's going to take time for him to develop, and you know what? I hope he's a student of the game, as we've seen that Kirby Doc is, and he takes this time off to better himself in whatever way that the organization deems.
And I hope they pair him with a complementary D partner. I don't know if Duncan Keith is the right piece to play with Adam because of, and you brought this up on the last podcast, Steve, that, you know, Keith is still leans towards the offensive side of the game, gambles at times, closes gap quickly on forwards. And if you're trying to have Adam ignite and be a part of the offense, it's probably best to have him out there with a more defensive-minded D-man, right?
I like that. I mean, you know, the new NHL, you know, sometimes you'll see two offensive guys out there. You know, the San Jose Sharks, I know they had Brent Burns and Erik Karlsson as D-men. But what I do like about that mix and what I didn't like about Dunks and Adam Boqvist, I'd like to have one guy kind of be a little beefier, a little bigger. You know, both, you know, not that Duncan's a small guy, but, you know, he's of slighter build, and so is Adam Boqvist. So, you know, I'd like to see one guy, and that's why I liked Adam Boqvist and Calvin DeHaan. Not only do you have a left and right shot, but you've got a guy who's going to stay home in DeHaan, and he's a little bigger, and you've got an Adam Boqvist who has got the green light to go, and, you know, he's not going to worry about, well, should I jump up now or should I maybe stay back? So I think that alleviates some of the hesitation of jumping into the play when you've got two offensive guys. When you know one guy's going to be back there all the time, I think it just, in Adam Boqvist's mind, it's a little easier to jump up knowing that, you know, somebody's going to be back, and that guy, at least for the last couple of games, was Adam Boqvist.
It was good to see the cornerstones of the franchise showing up in the elimination game. Both Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane scored goals in Game 5. Actually, it's the first time ever that the Hawks have lost in the postseason when Kane and Toews both scored. The Hawks fall to 6-1 in postseason games when 88 and 19 both light the lamp. Afterwards, Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, and Jeremy Colliton talked about the valuable opportunity of playing in this postseason.
It's obviously a good experience, and you know, I think it's a whole nother level when there's fans in the building, but still to play in these postseason playoff games, for guys that have never done that, it's a huge, huge way to get experience for those guys. And, you know, I think we can build off this too as a team. I'm not sure what the team will look like come next year, but the young guys that were around and got a chance to play in this postseason, hopefully take this as a valuable learning lesson, and we can get better as a group from it.
You know, things would have gone the way they were supposed to before this entire situation. We wouldn't have had a chance to play in the playoffs. So, I mean, it was a great opportunity for us to come in and play some meaningful hockey. And I think a lot of guys stepped up to the plate and showed what they can do. And I think even in this series, a lot of our smaller guys were playing a lot bigger than they are. You know, going down the list, guys like DeBrincat and Highmore and Kajula, even Kaner was throwing the body around tonight. So I think a lot of young guys, I think, contributed and showed a lot. So there's definitely some positives there. Like I said, it was definitely good for us to get back to the playoffs and play some meaningful games for the guys who haven't been here before, and even for the guys who have. When you miss the playoffs for a couple of years in a row, you're watching a lot of hockey late in the spring, and you kind of lose track of where you stand, because there's no doubt it's a different level from the regular season. And you know, I think there's some benefit there for the veteran guys on our team as well.
Well, it was just good to see us take that next step in our team game to play the way we need to play to win a playoff series and compete against, an elite team in Vegas or the top seed. And I thought, we were right with them in most of the games here. Just nice to see us improve and take that step. There's more to come. And, we got to use this experience to improve and understand the standard that we need to get to beat a team like this. But I think that's the biggest thing, is just nice to see us take that step.
And look, prior to the pause, the Hawks had less than 3% chance of making the playoffs. So because of the pandemic, because of COVID-19, they were given this lottery ticket, so to speak. And I think the Jammer made the most of it, being realistic. They were the youngest team of the 24 in the tournament. They went and took on a team that was the host, they were the host team, so to speak. They were 15 minutes from their house, even though they were in the same hotel. And they were taking on the two leading scorers in the National Hockey League, who kind of had the narrative of, we're expecting to see more from this team in the playoffs. And they ousted them in four games.
Yeah, they did. And, that was impressive. I was impressed by the way Jeremy Colliton and his staff prepared, because they had a lot of time to prepare for the Edmonton Oilers, and they had a great game plan, and they executed it to perfection. I was impressed by the younger players stepping up, the maturation of Kirby Dach, and the steps he took going forward really stick out and jump off the page for me. And, the defense were better than I thought. I thought Olli Maatta certainly had a fantastic playoff.
Huge, huge playoff.
DeHaan was serviceable after being injured for most of the year.
Murphy had a real strong game in game five.
He really did. Murphy was good. So, I still think you need a couple guys that are bruisers. Maybe they don't play every night, but can still skate. They're out there. Like, there's got to be some guys who play a simple game, but are going to make you pay. So when you're playing these big teams like Vegas in the West, you have an answer for them. Maybe a couple bigger guys up front too would help. But I still think that's the way the game is. But what a great experience it was for these young guys.
And I think, the way the Blackhawks looked at a Jammer, this was like a second chance for them. Because had the regular season played out, they weren't going to make the playoffs. So they're playing with house money. And they go up against the Edmonton Oilers. Not a lot of people thought they had a chance against Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, and they were the fifth seed in the Western Conference. And in fact, I think it was they went on a 2 or 3 game losing streak. They were within a point of winning their division.
Right.
So they knock off a pretty good team there. Now they get a little bit of confidence, and I would have loved to have played in a situation like this, where you're in a bubble, you're around 12 teams at one point, and then you're down to 8 teams. You're eat, sleep, and breathe hockey. And of course, when you're in Canada, you get to watch you know, Sportsnet and TSN, and it's nonstop hockey, and it's just a great atmosphere. They're talking hockey, they're watching hockey. You know, the young guys, and there's 10 or 11 guys in this team who've never played in a postseason game. What a great experience for them to go through that and to be able to live with a Patrick Kane and pick his brain or you know, whoever, Jonathan Toews. It's going to go a long way in these guys' careers.
Let's talk about some of the guys that stood out this year, and let's talk about Kirby Dach, because number one, and we talked about it on previous podcasts, how he approached the pause, how he went up to Patrick Kane and asked him for his trainer here in Chicago, how he worked with Ian Mack, and how virtually he worked with Ian during the four-month layoff between the season being paused and the return to play. That was very evident. I thought he looked like a different player in this playoff. That being said, there was still a lot of deferring on the ice, and we saw, you know, a 2-on-1 in game 5, and, you know, even if he shoots for a rebound to pass to, you know, he too many times you saw him deferring and not taking shots, and I think that's just one area that hopefully he will improve upon.
I think my guess is that there's a lack of confidence in his shot. And so, and he's been a passer his whole life. And so I think he's just always been able to pass through D. And so his instinct is, I'll just give my line mate an empty netter. And if that pass goes through, it would have been an empty netter, even if the receiver was left-handed.
It was Kajula, right?
It was Kajula, yeah. But to me, he has to start shooting, because what happens is the goalies are too good and the defense are too good. And so the defense are adept at stopping that pass, and the goalies are adept at pushing off and making a save. You have to have confidence in your shot and know that you can beat a goalie just with your shot on a 2-on-1. And he'll get there. And he's not going to get there when we think he should get there within this series. He's going to come back. It's going to eat at him. And he's going to get an opportunity. And next year, I expect him to jump off and start shooting the puck.
You got to prove at the faceoff circle, which you think that's very realistic.
That's a fixable. And what I mean by that is, I'll never be able to control the puck down low below the goal line like him. But you can win. You can figure out how to win faceoffs, and there's a way to do that, and there's studying that has to happen, and then there's execution and practice, and he doesn't have to be a 65% guy. He have to get into the low 50s, and then that's a serviceable guy that you can use in all situations.
You know who I see, and I'll throw this out as a comparable, and we talked about it, is Ryan Getzlaff. And when Ryan Getzlaff came into the league, he deferred. He was a passer. He wouldn't shoot the puck a lot himself. And, you know, second and third year in the league, he started to shoot a lot more. So, you know, if he could be on that type of trajectory where, you know, Ryan Getzlaff, you know, in his third and fourth and fifth year was controlling games, that'll be exactly what the Blackhawks want.
The only issue I see is if we pencil him in as a second line center with Patrick Kane, when you play with Kane, you tend to feel like you need to get him the puck. So on one hand, we're telling him, and that wasn't the case on the 2-on-1, it was Kajula. But, you know, when you're out there with 88, a lot of times you feel you need to feed 88, and we're talking about him becoming more selfish, so to speak. That's going to be an interesting dynamic for a young player to work through, right?
Yeah, I'm not even sure those two – it'll fit those two together.
Like that might
Kaner
not
plays
be the
long-term right side
answer.
And even though he's the right shot, you think Kaner's left-handed. No, actually, Kaner plays the right side. So, you typically want Kaner with a left-hand shot. The key is just to have one other guy with Kaner. It doesn't matter if that's the center of the wing. Kaner, to me, plays the wing like a centerman. So, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't have to be Kirby. Kirby is going to have to realize that I don't care if I'm on a 2-on-1 with Patrick Kane or with Jonathan Toews. If it's a shot's available, I'm shooting it. And, you know, I think he'll get there.
And I think those guys will tell him, too. I think Patrick Kane will be like, just shoot next time. You should have shot. And I'm hoping Drake Kajula went to him after that period and said, you got to shoot the puck. And I want you to shoot, because if the goalie stops it, the rebound might come to me. I'm heading to the net, and I might be able to score myself. So, it'll come. It'll come slowly. But I think the fact that, you know, if he does get to play with Patrick Kane, Patrick Kane will fill him in pretty quickly.
Coming up, we'll talk about another big surprise this year, Dominic Kubalik, who is a restricted free agent. But first, Monday, August 24th marks 1 year out from the Tokyo Paralympics. The world will come back together to celebrate competition, unity, and the triumph of the human spirit as the best athletes on Earth pursue a dream delayed. The Tokyo Paralympic Games begin next August only on NBC.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
So I think one of the other big surprises for the year, guys, was the play of Dominic Kubalik, who scored the 30 goals in his rookie campaign. He was a Calder Trophy finalist at the age of 24, and he got off to a fantastic start in the Edmonton series. In game one, he bookended it with a solid game in the clincher. He was a little bit quiet in the series against the Vegas Golden Knights. But your thoughts on what you saw from Dominic Kubalik and how big a part of this franchise can he be going forward?
Well, he's an elite scorer. I mean, it's only 1 year, and you know sometimes guys are flashes in the pan, but I think he's got all the elements to be a good scorer for a long time, whether it's his shot, his skating ability, his size. He's pretty fearless, too. I mean, he goes to those tough areas. So I think the fact that he played junior hockey a couple of years in the OHL helped, and some of these European players – end up playing on European ice their whole careers, and then when they come to the United States or they come to North America, it just feels like a different game for them. He had the experience of playing in junior hockey. Yes, he played in the Swiss Elite League, but he lit it up there, and boy, he lit up the NHL. There weren't many guys who scored 30 goals this year in the NHL, let alone a rookie. So for him to do that, kudos to him, good for him. Doing it next year is going to be a little tougher, and there's always that sophomore slump. But I think the fact that he's 24 years of age, I think that helps him too, because he's a mature rookie. He's probably finished growing, and he's probably going to have a new contract too. So I don't have any worries about him. He might not score 30 next year, but I think he's still a very important part of this team.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think he's a flash in the pan. I think that I'm encouraged by his age, by the fact that he started out on the third line. He cut his teeth and didn't really get an opportunity to play with Jonathan Toews and get on that number one power play till later in the season. And he scores in different ways. Uses his speed, goes to the tough areas, scores with a one-timer. If he only scored one way, then it'd be difficult for him to repeat that. The fact that he has been a goal scorer his entire life and he found success in the NHL, that's going to feed him to be hungrier and hungrier. And in all likelihood, he's going to sign a one-year deal, I would think, because he's 1 year away from unrestricted free agency. That's going to motivate him as well.
Drake Kajula is also a restricted free agent. I think he brings something to this team that they don't have a lot of, some bite to his game. I thought he did a nice job out there with Doc and Patrick Kane in the series against Vegas. Dylan Strome is an interesting study you know, because we saw Dylan when he was traded from Arizona last year. He was almost a point-per-game guy with the Blackhawks. And a lot of that when he was reunited with Alex DeBrincat, you saw the chemistry. It was palpable. It was great to watch. This season has, you know, first of all, in both chunks, it's had its ups and downs and some inconsistencies. And he didn't get the contract. Alex did. And Alex, you know, coming off a 40-goal campaign, he struggled with only 18. So the two very good friends, I'm sure, carried some of what was going on the ice back to the same condo building that they both live in. But your thoughts on where you're at with Dylan Strome overall?
You know, I think on this team, Dylan Strome could be a real solid third line center. I think this year he was a second line center, but I think with the maturation and the progression of Kirby Dach, he should be the second line center next year. You know, because he plays the power play, he plays the penalty kill. I'm talking about Dach. You know, for Strome, he's going to be on the power play. He's not going to kill penalties, but he'll be a third line guy. I don't know that you can give him much more than, you know, $3 million a year. Is he going to be upset with that? Probably not after the type of season he had. Now, 2 years ago, you said when he first got here, you know, he was putting up a point per game.
With the Blackhawks.
Yeah. I mean, you know, those guys, you know, can make $4 and $5 million a year if you're a point per game guy. But when you're not, and you know, in the playoffs, I don't even think he was half a point per game guy. That's a little bit of a knock. So, you know, I don't know what kind of term he's looking for. If he's looking for a short-term deal, I think the Blackhawks would be happy to have him back as long as it was at around that $3 million mark. Even that might be a little much, you know, depending on how much you have to give Kubalik and the goaltender Corey Crawford. So I like his hands. I think he's got great hands. He's got to work on his skating. His face-offs were a lot better the second half of the season, so he obviously took some pride in that. If he could get maybe a little stronger, a little faster in the offseason, I think it would really help him.
He has a lot of things that a lot of players don't have, right? His instincts are off the charts. His ability to playmaker, ridiculous. He's an offensive player.
He's got good size.
Unbelievable talent, and he's got good size.
Yeah.
But I don't know if he necessarily uses that size. You know what I mean? Like, he's got size, but he's like one of those guys. I'm like, finish your check. You know, like,
well, he's never going to be that physical guy, but he can use his size to create space, to create plays. But what he should do, in my opinion, is completely dedicate himself to become a better athlete. And he needs to get quicker. You're not going to get younger. You can get quicker. And so he needs to really dedicate himself to being a fitness freak. However he has to train with a track star or whatever he has to do to become a fitness guy, he has to get faster so that he can check, so that he doesn't get tired late in games, so that he can pull away from people. And DeBrincat did it. I'm sorry. DeBrincat did not skate like he skates now, his right. first year. Mm-hmm. He dedicated himself to fitness. He is a completely different skater, and it has nothing to do with him skating. It's his fitness.
Right.
It's his ability to get from point A to point B faster because he's generally faster.
We love Pauly Goodman. Dylan, we're also saying talk to Kaner. Get Ian Mack's number and work with him as well. You mentioned Corey Crawford. That really is the number one priority, because if you don't have goaltending in this game, and look, the Hawks still, before the pause, gave up the most high danger chances of anybody in the National Hockey League, and they did not allow the most high danger goals. That is because of their goaltending, and they had tremendous goaltending from Corey and from Robin. Robin is going to get paid, whether it's from Vegas or somewhere else. Corey, at age 35, has two boys, young boys. He's married. He's got a new place in Chicago. He has won two rings here. I think he wants to stay here. I mean, but I think he also looks at, now again, this is post-pandemic. It's going to be interesting because this salary cap's going to stay flat for the next couple of years. So There's going to be a lot of uncertainty for players that are free agents coming up. So, you know, you may want to bet on yourself if the number's not what you want because of, you know, to take that shorter term deal and hoping that, you know, a vaccine is found and that fans are allowed to come back into the arenas eventually, and that the payroll structure or the financial structure of organizations is not as tight as it's going to be mm-hmm. in the upcoming year. So we'll see how that all plays out. But I got to think there's a way to find common ground between Corey Crawford and the Blackhawks.
Yeah, I would think so. I think Corey, first choice would be to stay with the Hawks, the only team he's known. And, you know, I think he's also in a good position because he's played well. And I think it's a positive that we're thinking about what would be the term, what would be the number, because I can remember a year ago there were greater concerns about his health and his well-being going forward. So I think he's put those things to bed, which as a friend I think it's fantastic, and that's the most important thing. And he's shown that he can still play and at a high level mm-hmm. and against a team that has and could go on to compete for the cup. So he's in rare company. What's between his ears, and I don't like to throw mud at Henrik Lundqvist, but all the media attention he gets for his numbers and how great he was and blah, 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 he never won. And I'm tired of hearing about that. Yeah. I really am. And you never hear about Corey, who's won two cups.
Yeah.
Forget the numbers. I want the guy who's going to win. Yeah. I want the guy who wants to be in there and will find a way, regardless of what the score is, to win the game. And that's Corey.
You know, it's funny. During this last offseason, I was wondering how Corey would react when they brought in Robin Lehner, because you're bringing in a number one, or quote unquote, potential number one guy.
He's in his late 20s.
In his late 20s, who's won just recently won a Jennings Trophy, and you're in the last year of your contract. And I'm like, holy cow, this might not end well. Well, it actually ended up really well for Corey, because he kind of outbattled Robin Lehner. And for whatever reason, Robin Lehner was traded, and Corey's the guy. And he proved why he was the guy in the playoffs. I mean, he was absolutely fantastic. We don't need to belabor the fact that, yeah, he had the COVID-19, and he didn't really have a full training camp, and yet he still performed the way he performed. So,
sorry to cut you off, Steve. I would even say this. I think the Hawks lost this series in five. Corey outplayed Robin Lehner in the games. And so, if there's no question about it to me. If you look at it on a goaltender-to-goaltender basis, and I know nothing about the position enough to know, I'd rather, if everything being equal, I'd rather have Corey in that, even if I was on the other team saying, their goalie outplayed our goalie.
And you're absolutely –
and we still won.
You're right. So now he's proven his worth to the Blackhawks. But I agree with you, Pat. I think – he's a guy that's willing to give a hometown discount. And I say hometown because he's been here his whole career.
Yeah.
His wife's from here. His kids were born here. So I think he'd like to stay here. So, you know, will he give him the hometown? I think he will. And I think he wants to be back here. And he knows he'll be the number one guy. And there won't be somebody, you know, trying to steal his crease. I think it could work out really well, and I hope they're both on the, I hope the Blackhawks and he are on the same wavelength.
We don't know necessarily exactly what's going to shake down as far as the franchise and the organization is concerned, as far as business side, hockey ops side. It seems like Stan Bowman is on very solid footing under Danny Wirtz as interim president, but there's a good chance, too, that some changes are made, and we don't know how that's all going to play out. I'm just going to leave you with this last question. With what you saw this year, pre-pause and the Second Life kind of giving the lottery ticket to play in Edmonton, do you feel this team is on its way back to being legitimately somewhere between a 4 to an 8 seed in the West? Or do you still see it battling for a wild card, or do you think they could be in the upper echelon of the Western Conference?
I don't think we're going to be in the upper echelon of the Western Conference. It obviously depend on the maturation of Kirby, Doc, and how these young kids, whether it's Bodan or Mitchell, affect the back end. I don't think it'll be that dramatic. And I just look at this year, just you kind of wonder, had the power play just been a little better, where we might have been before it shut down March 12th. You know, I think if the power play is just a little bit better, we could have been a top eight. So going into next year with Kirby Doc being better, Adam Boqvist having a year under his belt, I think this team could be between 4 and 8 in the Western Conference.
I think top eight is realistic. I think this is a group that has to make a few changes and get a little bit bigger, a little bit meaner. I think that just you're going up against teams that are built that way in the Western Conference, whether Colorado's, you know, built that way. You look at, you know, Vegas and you look at the Blues, and you look at the teams that you're going to have to get ahead of. It's not going to be easy. So you have to be able to play. I think you just have to be able to play the game different ways. I think gone are the days that you can play it one way. Mm-hmm. Every team has to be able to play however you want to play it.
I'll finish with this. I just want to thank you guys on a personal note. It was another great year working with you guys. We obviously went through, like everybody else, a major ordeal with dealing with COVID-19, and we had to come back to the studios and go about it in a way we've never gone about it. And during the pause, we did Zooms and practicing things. I never knew what Zoom was 5 months ago, and then now it's like it's my best friend. So I appreciate all the sacrifices you make, whether it's traveling, being away from your family, at the drop of a hat, agreeing to do an interview or what have you. You guys are class acts, and I look forward to next year.
Pat, you are the straw that stirs the drink, and some nights you are the drink. So we thank you.
I got that right.
I don't know what we would do.
Yeah.
We have a good team here, and it's certainly been a trying year in our profession, and for all of us. We don't need to belabor the point. We've all had to adapt during this, but we thank you for listening. The Blackhawks Talk podcast is going nowhere. We will have a couple new episodes each and every week during the off season. We'll keep you abreast of everything that is going on at 1901 West Madison with your favorite hockey team. That'll do it for Jamal Mayer, Steve Conroy, for everybody in the Blackhawks Talk podcast. I'm Pat Boyle. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time.